Good morning, class.
Feel a little better.
This morning, we will treat lesson three with Jerusalem, God's beloved city. And we hope that this morning will be not quite as dry as it was yesterday. History, as a rule, is sort of dry, but there are some interesting points about it. And I think today, maybe, our approach might be a little more interesting. This morning, would like to consider the walls of the city during David and Solomon, Nehemiah and Jesus' time. And we believe that this will be interesting and prove beneficial to us. In several instances, it tends to improve our understanding and form a more vivid picture in our minds of some of the incidents that are recorded in connection with these walls. We would like to take, at this moment, the scriptural records as they deduce the following developments in Jerusalem as related to the Israelites. We can only try to formate a picture in your mind. And we're taking it, if you remember, from the virgin territory to the time where it became inhabited by a small group and then enlarged. And now today we are up to where God's renown is known throughout the earth. David, his son, has been appointed king and ruled over his people. And that he lived in this city here. So that from these scriptural records, we deduce these following things. The first one is that David captured the stronghold of Zion. I'm going to turn this map over here. Hope you can see it. It is one of the better maps that I came in contact with, and I looked for quite a few. And I might give credit to Sister Fordham, Virginia Fordham, of Arlington, Virginia, for that map. She got me a little small photostat, and I enlarged it to what you see, and I hope that you can see it, because although it might not be 100% correct, it has the points, the key points of interest in there, and I think it was about the best, under the circumstances, that we could have gotten a hold of. So the first thought here today is that David captured the stronghold of Zion from the Jebusites, which was the south section of the eastern ridge, and called it the City of David. In 2 Samuel, the 5th chapter, we read these verses. I think if we read these verses here this morning, we follow this thing a little more. 5th chapter, 2 Samuel, 7th and... Excuse me, in the 9th verse. This is the southeast hill. I mean, of course, this map here takes in the whole area. But we're talking about now, from David's time, of which we said was just this area right in here. It enlarged and then took in this area here. But the stronghold of Zion, or the stronghold of the Jebusites, was right in this area. And this is what David captured at that particular moment. Now, the 5th chapter, the 7th and the 9th verses here. He says, "Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same is the city of David." We mentioned yesterday that this word Zion and Jerusalem have been used interchangeably. But although that is true in some sense, it still is not 100% true in when we start from the beginning, because it started in a small form and was definitely in one area and then enlarged. So that this here now, he says, the stronghold of Zion, or the stronghold of the Jebusites, was this, and it is called there the City of David. The next one then is that David built round about from Millo and inward. That's 2 Samuel, the 5th chapter, the same chapter, the 9th verse here. I didn't read the ninth verse before, did I? So David dwelt in the fort and called it the city of David. And now, as I say, our next point is that he also built round about from Millo and inward. And in this ninth verse, and David built round about from Millo and inward. Now notice those words, Millo and inward, because from that we deduce that Millo was a section of the city of David. I don't know how many have in mind as to where Millo was. Millo is a word that is in our minds many times, but exactly where it was, I wonder. But it says here that Millo was connected with the city of David, so it must have been someplace right in this area here. And it was apparently in the northwestern part of the city, so that David built the area from Millo toward the stronghold. If it was in the northwestern part of the city, he evidently built from there in toward the city, or an area from here in toward the city. That's all that the city consisted of at that time. So Millo was apparently out here, and he built from that area out toward, or in toward the city. So that we might say then that Millo could be considered as sort of an outpost for the fort. We have, in our modern warfare, we have that type of thing, that the headquarters or the main body of the command or the territory command is protected by outposts. And apparently, in this stage here, because this is warfare, there wasn't any doubt about it, it was a city that was captured, and it was a city that was to be protected. And that was one of the things in which they did. Millo was part of this fortification. We use 2 Chronicles 3:1 for a text also in here to help us along the line. That's a text I've got in there, but I think it belongs on the next. I think it got out of place. It's in relation to the temple. So if we go on now to the third point here, that Solomon built the temple on Mount Moriah, which was the central section of the eastern ridge, and built a wall around it. That's the central section. In this right here is the city of David, right down in here. That's this area right in here. And then after David, Solomon turned around and on Mount Moriah built the temple, which was on the central eastern ridge, and built a wall around it. And at the same time, Solomon built the wall of Jerusalem. We use that Second Chronicles 3:1, to substantiate that Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem in Mount Moriah. We learn from 1 Kings 11:27 that Solomon repaired or closed, as the margin gives it, the breaches of the city of David his father. 1 Kings 11:27. And this was the cause that he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Millo and repaired the breaches of the city of David his father, or as we say, the marginal reference gives it, closed the breaches of the city of David his father. So that apparently at that time there was not a wall out here, and that Millo being the outpost, it was all that was there, and that from a military standpoint they recognized that it would be much stronger if they turned around and enclosed this. So Solomon then attempted to build part of the wall around Jerusalem. The first wall is right across here. He built this wall up here and around in here. There apparently was no wall around here at the beginning. There was just a mount that was set off by natural defenses, and when it was taken, it was enlarged by David and further enlarged by his son Solomon, and then the wall started to be added to the territory. So that's that wall right across in here. Just the thought of closing up the breaches there, the marginal reference indicates that there it was vulnerable, and he closed it up so that it would be harder to come through there, that the outpost of Millau was not sufficient. It would be better to have a wall around the city there. So then the next one, Solomon apparently realized that the city was vulnerable from the northwest direction and built what was has been come to be known as the first wall of the city, extending approximately from the center of the western side of the temple westward to the western extremity of the south eastern ridge. Now, the temple was built in here, and we indicate that from the center of the temple westward, the west boundary of the temple, over to the western section of the southwestern ridge here. Just exactly when this was built around here is hard to put your finger on. It does not seem to indicate that Solomon built that whole wall across here. However, it was must have been added shortly afterwards, because Josephus includes this all in the first wall. So it must have been shortly after that that they added that to it. The fifth point then is, during one of the quarrels between Israel and Judah, Joash, king of Israel, broke down the wall from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, a distance of 400 cubits, or approximately 600 feet. We are referenced for that as 2 Chronicles 25, 23. And Joash the king of Israel took Amaziah king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Beth Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem, and break down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. Now the gate of Ephraim is right in this area here, and the corner gate is referred to as being over here, that there was a short distance in here of which was broken down by Joash. We see here that much of Jerusalem, what happened in Jerusalem, was not only a result of the outside nations, but it was also friction in the household of Israel itself. Hezekiah, our next point then, king of Judah, about 140 years later, built up all the wall that was broken, and at the same time raised up another wall, which is known as the second wall, that was without the city, as it says. And Millau was repaired at that time. 2 Chronicles 32, 25. Also, he strengthened himself and built up all the wall that was broken and raised it up to the towers, and another wall without, and repaired Millau in the city of David, and made darts and shields in abundance. So that the second wall came into existence at that time. He repaired this section that was broken through here, and at the same time he built what is known as the second wall, which starts roughly in here and went over to the northern part of the city, or this part of the edge of the temple. Now that is the extremity as far as up here is concerned. As we say, this wall down here, I'm not exactly sure that who built it. I don't know whether the scriptures actually gives who built it. But sometimes before the destruction of Jerusalem, this wall was definitely in here, and it was in here before this second wall. Apparently, Millau was located on a line between the broken wall and the stronghold. That's what it seemed to be. With Millau being in the northwest part of the city here, and the wall broken over here, that it would be vulnerable to come right through here. So he make sure that this part of the wall was repaired, and then to enforce it further, they built up another wall to reinforce it. The seventh point, towers were added to the wall by King Uzziah at the corner gate, at the valley gate, and at the turning of the wall. That's 2 Chronicles 26:9. 26:9. Moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate, and at the valley gate, and at the turning of the wall, and fortified them. So that the corner gate, it's over right in this area where the wall turned. The valley gate is down in here. It is also known as the Essen Gate and the turning of the wall. And towers were built on these walls. It might be appreciated more what these walls were like if we consider that these walls were big enough, large enough, wide enough, that there were streets, more or less, on the top of them, and that houses and structures were there, and also towers. And the towers, of course, would be, from a military standpoint, so that they could shoot down on the enemy when they attempted to scale the wall. It's all part of a military approach. It's applied today in different forms, but the principles are the same as they were in those days. These people were military people. In fact, we could say that probably no people in the history of the world has a better military record than the Jewish people. They are real brilliant in their operations. And David was not the only one. David was a very excellent one, but there were many others. King Jotham built the high gate of the house of the Lord and increased the buildings on the wall of Ophel. That's 2 Chronicles 27:3. He built the high gate of the house of the Lord, and on the wall of Ophel he built much. Now these are little tidbits, or we might say, or keys that we get from the scriptures. The only time that the whole wall is more or less mentioned together is in the book of Nehemiah when they're repairing the wall. But we're picking out these little points to show the wall, its development, and the what is written about it in the scriptures. And Ophel is one of those places where there's no doubt about, over in here, and there's apparently a high gate. Now, I'm not 100% sure of this, but apparently there was a high gate here. There was some kind of a wall across here, and there was a high gate that went from the temple to the king's palace so that they went back and forth in here. King Jotham built that high gate of the house of the Lord, and he increased the buildings on the wall of Ophel. We have, after that, we have Manasseh. Who is recorded in there. We mentioned it earlier, that we're told in 2 Chronicles 33:14 that King Manasseh built a wall without the city of David on the west side of Gihon, in the valley, even to the entering in at the fish gate, and encompassing about Ophel. So that Manasseh apparently must have built part of the wall from here on around to the northern part, because this part was extending. We just mentioned when Jotham was king, and that Manasseh later, saying that it was on the west side of Gihon and encompassed Ophel all around, apparently it was an opening through here someplace, that he closed up that opening and followed around and more or less closed up the fortification or the wall around the city. The next point then is no further reference is made to the walls until the 11th year of King Zedekiah's reign, B.C. 586, when Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, or as the marginal gives it, the chief marshal or the general of his army, of Nebuchadnezzar's army, break down the wall of Jerusalem round about. In 2 Kings 25, 2 and 10, we have those words. 2 Kings 25, 2 and 10. The city was besieged under the 11th year of King Zedekiah. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard break down the walls of Jerusalem round about. This is at the end now of Judah's commonwealth, when God is about to destroy it for its wickedness. And this is part of the destruction when they come in there for the first time. The prophet Jeremiah tells us as to just what extent the wall was destroyed. It says in Jeremiah 52:14 that all the walls of Jerusalem were destroyed round about. Jeremiah 52:14. It was not a case of just coming in and breaking down a small portion such as had been broken from the eastern gate of Ephraim over to the corner gate. This was an outside army, one that was also very smart in their military operations, and they recognized that the best way to remove that from being a thorn in their side was to break down all the walls, take it out there completely. 52:14. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard break down all the walls of Jerusalem round about. So that thus was the condition of Jerusalem until Nehemiah's time. There's another point that's mentioned at this particular time about King Zedekiah and his army attempting to escape from the Chaldean army, fled Jerusalem, as we recall, going out of the city by night, by the way of the king's garden, by the gate betwixt the two walls, and he went out the way of the plain. Now the plain here that's mentioned is the plain of Jericho, which is to the northeast. And there at some time was apparently an intermediate wall. That is indicated in here, erected here. And there's a gate right down in here, and the king's garden is traditionally known to be down in here, and it is believed that this is what he attempted to do, was to flee between these two walls, go down into here, and to go up into the northeast, into the plain of Jericho. And of course, scripture records that he was caught trying to do so. Our understanding that the seat of government was in this area more or less helps us to come to the conclusion, and also with other points of scripture, as to just about what took place, that this is the place. We might look at this as our own capital city of Washington. Washington right now is quite a large city, but when it started, it was built around Capitol Hill, where the seat of government is. And if you'll notice that right across the street from the Capitol is the Supreme Court. The two are interconnected as far as government and rule is concerned. And this is somewhat the same idea here, that the seat of the home or the palace, the living quarters of the king, was in this area, and the temple or the worship, the house of God, was immediately near it. So that access, that they could go back and forth in here without coming in contact too much with the common people. It was sort of set off. So as I say, we can see the development, how she starts, and then how it eventually grew into a larger city the same way that all cities do. The The walls were rebuilt under Nehemiah's direction about B.C. 445. And it is from this prophet that we receive our most detailed information of the surrounding wall. Here we have picked out certain things that have happened in certain periods of Israel's history. But in relation to Nehemiah here, he has put the whole thing together. Although Nehemiah's account covers the whole enclosure, there is much conjecture as to the actual locations of the walls. I have another chart under here that anyone wants to look at later. It is the photostatic copies of different people's theories of the walls at the time of Nehemiah. And just to look at them, you can see how they can vary considerably according to a man's understanding. You probably won't be able to see it too much from there, but if you wish afterwards, you can take a look at them. So that when you treat a subject like this, maybe it's the naiveness that allows you to go into it, that you think that it'll be quite simple, and then as you get into it and you find out all the theories, traditions, and everything, you become discouraged. And then you wonder whether you got yourself into hot water or not. But usually, a little help from the Lord, a little looking in the scriptures, and a little help from outside sources, such as I mentioned that I got in Arlington, you renew your efforts and you start out again. So that there are a few keys provided in the scriptures which help us to narrow down the many existing theories to just a few. So let us consider now the description of the wall in the third chapter of Nehemiah. If we would just get that chapter in Nehemiah. Sometimes you might think that this is like parts of the law of Moses, this real dry. But I think that you come to appreciate that much of that that you thought was dry in the law of Moses is where some of your most important information comes in relation to God's plan of salvation. We have made the statement many times, and we will make it once again, that anyone who thinks that they know or have a good understanding of God's plan of salvation from the New Testament will have a much better understanding if they couple it with the Old Testament, because the keys of many of these things are in the Old Testament. And such is the case here. Primarily, in this description of the third chapter, there are 10 gates mentioned. There are 4 towers, and there are 2 pools. And our first key is the location of the sheep gate. That apparently is our starting point. And John the, John the second chapter, the fifth chapter, the Gospel of John this is, in the second verse, gives us a little help on trying to tie down this sheep gate. It says here that the sheep gate, or was the sheep market, or the sheep gate in the margin, is by the pool Bethesda, John 5:2. Now there is at Jerusalem, by the sheep market, or as we say in the margin, by the sheep gate, a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having 5 porches. This location of Bethesda is one of the things that is accepted without a doubt today as to where that pool is. And that pool is right there. It was outside of the northern wall, but it is right there, so that it is by the sheep gate. I don't know whether everybody can see or not. The pool of Bethesda is right here, so that the sheep gate was in that area. And that's our starting point with Nehemiah. So that traveling in a counterclockwise direction, that is going from right to left, We then can trace the sequence of the sections mentioned by Nehemiah. Nehemiah starts out and talks about the section starting from the sheep gate, and then the towers of Mea and Nehemiah and Hananeel, the fish gate, and goes on to go around, and we'll pick those up verse by verse in just a few minutes. But the second key then is the location of the valley gate, which was by the dragon's well. That's in Nehemiah, it refers to it in Nehemiah, the second chapter, the 13th verse here. And he says, I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. So that the dung gate is down in this area, the dragon's well is in this area, simply because it is located between the valley and the dung gate. There are other people that have it in different places, but there is a very little doubt that this is the valley gate and that this was the position of the dung gate. The next key is the location of the fountain or well gate, which was near the pool of Siloam. Here again, there is no doubt as to the location of this pool. It still exists at the southernmost end of the southeastern ridge. The pool of Siloam is down in this area right down here, on the southern end of the southeastern ridge. And again, if you remember, we said that Gion was piped up to this pool of Siloam. An aqueduct was brought in here, and that we have attempted to indicate on the map as coming down into the pool of Siloam. If this was outside of the wall, the people wanted the water inside of the city, inside of the protection, and therefore an aqueduct was brought down, and the pool of Siloam was formed as a result of it. Next, we learn from Nehemiah that the water gate is eastward. In the 12th chapter of Nehemiah, in the 37th verse, it ties that the water gate down. And at the fountain gate, which was over against them, they went up by the stairs of the city of David at the going of the wall above the house of David, even unto the water gate eastward. So the water gate must have to be over in this area someplace. They say we're picking these out at random the way that the scriptures had given them, and then we will attempt to go around according to Nehemiah and see whether they do not fall in the harmony of where they are alleged to be. Jeremiah 31:40 tells us that the horse gate is toward the east also. In the 31st chapter, Jeremiah, in the 40th verse. And the whole valley of the dead bodies and the ashes and all the fields under the brook Kidron, under the corner of the horse gate toward the east, shall be holy unto the Lord. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever. Now here is one of the prophecies of the later day tied in with these gates of the city. And I think from that angle then you can begin to probably appreciate a little more, a little knowledge of what these gates, where they were and how they came about and things of that nature. Because the Lord has taken them and tied in part of his prophecy in the latter days in relation to them. Now between the water and the horse gates was the wall of Ophel. So there isn't any doubt as to where the wall of Ophel was. It was in around here. That means that the water gate had to be over here, or which was in the east, and the horse gate had to be on the other extremity of the Wall of Offal. The Wall of Offal, although it's part of the whole wall, was only a certain section of it. It took the area of which was called Offal. And there, from 2 Chronicles 33:14, we have already quoted, was on the west side of Gaia. So that these things are beginning to dovetail one into the other to the point of where we do not believe it's conjecture much anymore. We believe that this is pretty authentic. As to the exact configuration of things of that nature, I wouldn't substantiate that, but it isn't far off. And even the different maps that you get according to different theories, they don't change the configuration too much. It's just a case of where they place each thing, that's all. It appears then, also from these words, that King Manasseh continued the wall from Offal round to the fish gate, completing the enclosure of the city. Now, there's nothing mentioned up to this time of the sheep gate. So it looks like that Manasseh took the wall from wherever it stopped in here and continued it around over into, which is the fish gate, right in around here. And by that time then the wall was completed around the whole city. It should be noted that Nehemiah's wall consisted of part of what is known as the first wall and all of the second. Because Nehemiah does not refer to this part of the wall. He's got the second and part of the first. There was no particular need of Nehemiah repairing this. What he was interested in was the outer fortification of the outer wall, and that the second wall being out here would naturally be the one. Now we might use Josephus' description of the two walls as a check on our premise. According to him then, and we quote, he says the first wall began on the north at the tower called Hippicus. And we mentioned before in the history yesterday that there were three towers here built by the Romans, and that they were left as a memorial of their ability to take this city so that everybody would see it. So that those three towers, Hippicus and Amni, I'm struggling on this, there's no doubt about it, and the other one is Pharisaeus, were right there together. There were three of them right in together. But there's a starting point as far as the Josephus is concerned, the Hippicus Tower. So he says that at the tower called Hippicus, and extending as far as the Xistus, it's spelled X-I-S-T-U-S, or it can be spelled also X-Y-S-T-U-S, which apparently is market or a gymnasium place, is where it went to. So it started from here and went over into here. Now that's the one section of the first wall. And it ended at the west cloister, and then joining to the council house, ended at the west cloister of the temple. Now that's the west cloister of the temple right in there. And there's a council house that was right in here, and it continued right on there and ended to there. So that took care of the northern section of the first wall. And then he turns around and starting, he says, if we go the other way, westward, it began at the same place. Now that's the same place right here. And it extended through a place called Bethso, B-E-T-H-S-O, to the gate of the Essence. This is what is referred to as Bethso down here. And it continues from there on down to the Essen Gate, or the Valley Gate. And after that it went southward, having its bending above the Fountain of Siloam. You wonder at first what you mean southward, but I believe that because that this city is more or less on an axis like this, or on an axis like this, the inasmuch as the wall pitches down, it's pitching southward, and that was the way that they described it. It had a tendency to pitch down southward until it came to the fountain of Siloam, and then it turned. The fountain of Siloam, where it also bends again toward the east, and there again, as we say, although this is more or less in the northeastern direction, he's using east, it goes off at an angle toward the east at Solomon's Pool and reaches as far as the certain place which is called Ophlas or Ophel, where it was joined to the eastern cloister of the temple. Now, apparently, according to Josephus, that went up here and tied in here to the eastern cloister of the temple. Then he says the second wall took its beginning from the gate which is called Genath. That's G-E-N-N-A-T-H, or it means a garden gate, which belonged to the first wall. So that this wall of Genath, or garden gate, is thought to be roughly near the corner gate. It started at that gate of the first wall, and then it went, it only encompassed the northern quarter of the city, and it reached as far as the Tower of Antonia, which is this tower right up in here. Now, the towers of Mia and Hananiel are not on here, but they were in this area, and the Romans, recognizing that those towers were beneficial from a military standpoint, enlarged them to the extent of making them quite a bit bigger and probably better for their plans of fortification, and they called it then the Tower of Antonia. So that wall started from the garden gate, or roughly the corner gate, and took the northern part of the city and extended up into here. So that we think that substantiates pretty much the setup that Nehemiah gave us. A quick rundown then of the names of the gates will show that they were so named and located according to their usage. You might wonder why one was called the sheep gate, one the fish gate, and so on. In those days, they had a definite reason for naming things. Today, we name many things because we like them. But in those days, they had a definite reason, and if it didn't particularly have, I suppose, a name, through its usage, it became to be known as a certain gate. So that going back to the third chapter of Nehemiah, we have the sheep gate mentioned in the first verse. That's our starting point. The sheep gate. Then we have the fish gate mentioned in the third verse. Now the sheep gate is located, as we said, near the pool of Bethesda. It was in the temple area, and it's quite obvious that it would be there for the simple reason that the sacrifices were brought in here, the animals were brought in here, and the gate that they would pass through would be near the temple. So the sheep gate is, in our opinion, is properly located. The fish gate is over in the market area, this whole area in here. So the Triropian Valley that went on down and through here, the Valley of the Cheese Markets, was more or less in this area here, the marketplace of the ancient city of Jerusalem. So that the fish gate would be in that area because it is part of the everyday part of their life. The old gate then is mentioned in verse 6. The old gate here evidently was one of the main routes from Shechem down in here. It was one of their first accesses coming down in here. You remember that we said that the eastern, southern, and the western section of this was pretty well protected by national defense. The accents was more accent was the access was more from the north. And this is coming from Shechem and came down through the old gate. This other branch came through the fish gate into the market area. The next one then is there is a towers injected in between here, but we'll go back with those. We'll just take the gates here at the moment. The next one then is the valley gate in verse 13. You'll notice here that the corner gate is not referred to in Nehemiah. The next one in Nehemiah is the valley gate, which is down in here. However, we'll see that the corner gate is mentioned in other parts of Scripture. This was down in the valley, entering into the valley, and of course the Valley of Hinnom was the place where the dead bodies were cast, and it's where the field they call the Seldama, or the field of blood, it had its value from that standpoint, that that's where they burned many of the bodies down in that area. So they had to have an access down in there. The next one mentioned there is the Dung Gate in the 14th verse, which apparently is where all the refuse was taken and thrown still down in the same contaminated area. The sixth one is the Fountain Gate, verse 15, which is now getting down here near the water, where the water area is. Down near the Fountain Gate. And that's the Well Gate, I think. Fountain Gate, verse 15. The next one that is mentioned is the Water Gate, which is verse 26. Now that Water Gate is listed up in here. Remember we said that it was located toward the east. Then comes the Horse Gate in the 28th verse. And the Horse Gate is alleged to have been up in this area. As we found out that the Ophel was between the Water Gate and the Horse Gate. The ninth one is the East Gate in the 29th verse. Now the East Gate, apparently, it isn't on this here, but the East Gate was apparently the main access. It could be the Brazen or the Corinthian Gate, because those are not mentioned in the Scripture. But the Eastern Gate is, and the Eastern Gate would be the main access to the temple. And then we have what is called in the Scriptures the Miphkad Gate. That's M-I-P-H-K-A-D, or verse 31. And the revised version of that word adds on to it Ham Miphkad. That's H-A-M-M-I-P-H-K-A-D. And it is said there that it incorporates the Hebrew article appointed place. It's a gate, probably the east gate of the temple, at the place where the sin offering was burned. Because where the sin offering was burned was called the Miphkad. And we have a comparison in the days of Ezekiel's temple where there's a similarity. In the 43rd chapter, in the 21st verse here, there's a similarity. And thou shalt take the bullock also of the sin offering, and he shall burn it in the appointed place. Remember we said it incorporated the Hebrew article, appointed place. He shall take this bullock of the sin offering, and he shall burn it in the appointed place of the house without the sanctuary. So apparently that is where the sin offering was offered, over in, right in this area, and it got its name from what it's referred to. That is all that is mentioned in relation to gates from Nehemiah. The next then are the towers. There are four towers. The Tower of Mia and the Tower of Hananel, which are in verse 1. And they follow after the sheep gate. And they're before the fish gate, so that those two towers were over in this area. We have then the Tower of the Furnaces, which is between the Old Gate and the Valley Gate in verse 11. And that those furnaces are believed to have been down in this area right in here. That the Old Gate being up in here and the Valley Gate is someplace along in here where these towers or the furnaces or the towers of ovens, as they were called. And then we have the fourth one here that's mentioned, the great tower that lieth out, or Ophel. That's in verse 27. Now this wall of Ophel had a tower that projected out here. And it was just another one of those means of fortification. But it was a big tower, apparently, and was worthy of note in the scriptures, because the men of Ophel here are part of the mighty men of the fighting force of David. We have the two pools then mentioned, the pool of Siloam, or Shelah as the Authorized Version gives it, or Siloam as we know it. And that is in verse 15. And that is down in this area here. And we have the other pool that is, that is referred to, the pool that was made, of which it is hard to place exact location as to what it was. It is known definitely to be down in here, but as to whether it was Solomon's pool or whether it was some other pool down in here, it's a little hard to tie it down. But that is in verse 16. There are other gates in the scriptures mentioned, and the not that we're going to have time to finish it, but we'll take these other gates that are mentioned in the scriptures. And I'll give you the scriptural reference if you wish. The first one is called the Corner Gate, which we've already mentioned. And that apparently is also known as the First Gate. The Corner Gate reference is 2 Kings 14:9 and 2 Chronicles 26:9. And referring to first, it is in Zechariah 14:10. It is believed to be first and the corner of the same gate. We have the, Bobby? 26:9. 2 Kings 14:9 was the first, 2 Chronicles 26:9 the second, and in relation to first, it was Zechariah 14:10. We have now the gate of Ephraim, because the Ephraim was mentioned, but it is in not in Nehemiah's account. Therefore, it was on this section of the first wall. And that is in Nehemiah 8:16 and also 12:39. Then we have a high gate of Benjamin, which is referred to in Jeremiah 20th chapter, the second verse, and the 38th chapter and the 7th verse. Now, that is alleged to be a gate that was out in this area right in here. That's the only location of which I could find for it. We have the prison gate, which is referred to Nehemiah 12:39. That the prison gate is shown right up in here. Remember, as we say, the seat of government was here, the army was quartered in here, the temple was here, so that all the things in relation to the government, the rule of people, and the means of defense were in this little area right in here. So that when the city grew out, it grew out to the west, and that these were just the ordinary people or subjects of the reign. Now those are other gates that are mentioned. There are gates of the temple that are mentioned also. The first one is the high gate Sur, S-U-R, which is 2 Kings 11:6, Second Chronicles 27:3, and that is believed to be the south gate of the temple. Remember that the temple was had a wall around it. It was not completely open, it had a wall around it. And that third gate is believed to be the south gate of the temple, or maybe the high gate that King Jotham made. The high gate would be the gate at which the king would pass through, going from his residence to the temple. We have the gate of the guard, 2 Kings 11:19, and 2 Chronicles 23:20. That apparently also is right in this area, someplace I cannot locate it too well. We have the Shalanketh, or the west gate in the colonnade over here. That is 1 Chronicles 26:16. And then we have the Gate Beautiful, which is recorded in Acts 3, 2, and 10. And there are, at present, four main gates in the city of Jerusalem. The first is the Damascus and Herod in the north wall. The second is the St. Stephen's and Golden Gate in the east wall. The third is the Zion and the Dung Gate in the south wall. And the fourth is the Jaffa in the west wall. Now those are the present major gates of Jerusalem. Time is up.